Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have a very interesting show tonight, sort of in tune with the holiday that we have, of course, July 4th. And I thought it would be interesting to talk about the spiritual missions of the United States. This is going to start sort of historically, but I think you'll see a pattern. And hopefully there'll be some understanding of what the United States in this world is here to be doing. But it isn't just one mission, it's a number of series, but there is a connection. And to begin with, I would like to tell you that if you want to call in, because this is a show about metaphysics and spirituality, you can do so by calling 877-876-5227 in the U.S. For those of you in Canada who would like to do the same, 888-815-9756. That's while we're on the air. Now, let me begin by just giving a few ideas about my understandings of what the United States is really all about. To begin with, we were formed by a bunch of, a whole crew of, you might say, people who were living more spiritually disciplined lives. Some of them were members of Masonic orders and that sort of thing, which were like mystery schools almost. And back in the days when, let's say the 18th century, when the United States was developing itself as a country rather than just a colony. If you go back to the 17th century, what there was of the U.S. in terms of colonies, people then living then did not think of themselves in any way separate from England. But gradually, from about 1755, 1769, people started to gradually move away from the concept, some did, that they were in some way intimately part of the English Empire, and instead started to see themselves as maybe forging on into a new type of country. It really came about because of mistreatment from England, but it also happened because the people involved, again, were more spiritually developed and more conscious, and were trying to develop a different way of, we'll say, relating among themselves to begin with, and then with other entities that we call countries, including the country from which they came from, in many cases, which was England. But I think the important element here is that at the beginning of this process, even back into the 17th century, it was meant, you might say by who or whom, but the point is it was meant that the United States would exist and that in the long run we would become somewhat who we are. Now, many of you or some of you may not live in the United States, so this may be kind of interesting. For those of us who do live in the United States, it may have greater significance, but maybe not. Okay, so what is it that the United States was supposed to do that was so different in terms of its original missions as a new country? And some of this is going to sound very familiar to those of us who live in the country, and that is, we were supposed to develop a country in which the elements of our Creator are fairly equally balanced in the way the country is formulated and particularly the way the government is constructed. And you might say, well, what is that? And I've talked about this many times, and I will try to explain this in as simple a way as possible. First of all and foremost, there needs to be freedom to think, and freedom to, we'll say, understand, and then finally freedom to create and act. This is a critical element to our Creator because without freedom, the growth of our Creator cannot really take place, which is the purpose of life itself. And so the whole universe not just Earth or the United States, becomes relatively or completely, possibly, meaningless if there isn't this freedom that, unfortunately, if we look at countries and our world before the advent of the United States, freedom was not most of the time at the top of the list of how to create either a country or a government or even a way of life. So freedom became an important element. And it wasn't just freedom to do something, although that's important. It was the freedom to think and create. This is important to understand because in its original mission, if we start from this premise, we can start seeing how we moved tangentially away from almost every other country and government that had been created, we'll say, in more modern times. Now, some of you might say, well, wait a second. Didn't those Greeks that lived in, like, Athens around 480, 500 B.C., didn't they have some kind of government going on that was attempting to do that? Yes, as an attempt, they did. And maybe some of those people, who I think were also spiritually disciplined people, may have reincarnated at a later time and been the forefathers, the founding fathers. I know that for those of you who are women right now, you say, well, what about women? Well, the women were there. They were just sort of in, back in those days, they were like married to or sisters of the forefathers. But we didn't have very many women that were directly involved in it. But still, the important point is that there was this element that was a connection among those that were most involved. So the mission was to create first freedom, but more than freedom. There was another balance to this creation that was somewhat, we'll say, less obvious for those who have read our Constitution, but interestingly is more represented somewhat equally in the Declaration of Independence, which, after all, is what this particular holiday in the United States is about, more than the Constitution is. And that is that we are also a country which has a mission, one of its missions, to help develop greater understanding or consciousness among those that live here. And we try to help to some extent, or have tried to help, others that live in other places to gain understanding as well. And you might say, well, where is that in the Declaration of Independence? I don't remember exactly that being stated that way. Well, it isn't. That's part of the issue, is that you've got to read the purpose beyond just the words. And the purpose is that it isn't just to be free, but it's to live a life that gives someone the ability to pursue things that lead to greater understandings. And maybe people say, well, isn't it, say, pursuit of happiness? Well, not exactly, but it's close. Those are close to the words. And it isn't about being happy as much as it is to create or be able to create what might be construed to be happiness. But it isn't about having things, as many people think it is, as much as it is being able to be both creative and to do so with greater levels of understanding. This is a great process because part of the Declaration of Independence also talks about that the rights of these things comes from an understanding of our own Creator. That's where the real big understanding is. The understanding of our own Creator. Whoa. Yeah, I pulled one on you, didn't I, there? Yeah, that's in there. That's in the Declaration of Independence. And that's the key to the understanding issue, not so much just a question of having things or being happy, but it's about having this ability to connect with and understand our Creator, and to realize that we are a replication of the rights and the responsibilities of this great being. And I think that that is what makes us unique. Because freedom has come up in times past. Freedom was something that was even talked about in Plato's Republic, which is, you know, 350 B.C. And I think it's a great work, by the way. I recommend reading that book. But understanding one's Creator and being connected to our Creator and being endowed with from our Creator with the rights to become a part of our Creator, that goes beyond anything that the Greeks really did create, because they were not as advanced as the people that were spiritually disciplined that created the United States. It is my belief that the people who created the United States, I'm talking about the founders, were the most advanced spiritually disciplined people living in the world at the time. I think they were amazing people. That doesn't mean they walked on water. That doesn't mean they were perfect by any stretch of the imagination. They had their foibles. They had a lot of issues, as they were still humans. They weren't perfect. They weren't even close to perfect. But the point is that they were still the most advanced, and that so many would be found in a very small part of the globe, in an odd place, besides some place where people are living on the fringe, you might say, because it's a colony. It's not even part of England in a full sense. This is an amazing thing that this would take place. So it is not coincidental. I don't want you to think that the souls of these people plan this great occurrence to take place. It's the souls of these people, their older souls, even beyond souls, that wanted to create this country. And the plans were, as I said, for some time in the making, at least 100 years or more beforehand, maybe quite beyond that. So we shouldn't think that this is like some great, amazing coincidence that suddenly these people suddenly came together and said, oh, yeah, let's do it. Okay, what is the third part of this whole thing? Well, the third part has to do with the activities of those that came here, representing the activities, again, of their Creator, but also having the rights and abilities to do what they want to do. And this is going to maybe get some of the listeners out there a little upset, particularly if they don't live in the U.S. Because one of the things that the U.S. has is a not just a form of government, but an economic condition which feeds creativity and development. Now, whether you're a socialist or some other thing besides, and you prefer that kind of government, that's okay. But I'm suggesting that the United States, as one of its missions, was not just to create people who were free and who had an understanding of their own Creator and wanted to create more of that, but they also wanted to create more, we'll say, of the material existence that would be extremely creative and that would lead to what we could call the Industrial Revolution and eventually the age of technologies that we're familiar with today. It isn't that we're the only people doing this, it's just that we are the leading people doing this. And others can follow and do many of the, we'll say, making of things after the fact. But in terms of just discovering the ultimate ways of creating things that are going to impact the world in a material sense, because this is a material universe, and this particular part of the universe is very material, the United States has a mission to really be a leader in that respect, too. And leading is the biggest issue in all of these connections of each mission. We are here to lead. We are here to sacrifice, which is part of leadership, a good deal of many of the comforts and many of the, we'll say, ease of life, even pursuit of happiness, believe it or not. We are here to sacrifice those to accomplish our missions. In many spiritual texts that are more modern, the U.S. is spoken about as a leading or the leading country on earth. Not surprising, because that, I believe, is the thing that ties together everyone in the missions I'm going to speak to you all about this evening. So it's through this great leadership that we are supposed, and it's a tremendous responsibility that we have, that we make great sacrifices. And time again. I'm not talking about just one time. I'm saying it's been a sacrifice right from the get-go. And you could say, well, what other kinds of sacrifices? Can you name some things we're leading in? Well, many people point to Great Britain getting rid of slavery before the United States. But the United States did something different that it had to fight against. And that is, at first it had to have great prejudice and great, we'll say, levels of wrongfulness in its structure to then overcome them and to restructure its society. And it's still doing it today. I'm not kidding. I'm not saying this is in antiquity. This is right at the moment. So that we can become something greater than just a country that doesn't have slavery or even certain levels of prejudice. We are attempting to create a new kind of human, a human that doesn't, by nature, find itself to be separative and prejudicial right from the get-go, a human that by nature, and I'm not talking about education, I'm talking about by nature, finds itself open-minded and expressive of wanting to have inclusiveness with all others, regardless of their persuasion in religion or their type of race or their anything. That's our mission. And we're not anywhere near complete in that mission, and we have been struggling with it for some time. But we were set up to be this way. It wasn't something that was just accidental. And those that come here, those that are incarnated to be here, or whether they're born here or they move here, the point is that they are part of this great mission that has been going on since before we were a country, has been struggling through it for a long, long time. And it is only once we have achieved this that the next race of humans, some people call it the sixth race or whatever, doesn't really matter what number you want to call it. The point is that it is coming, but it will take hundreds of years further, maybe 1,000 years or more, before we see this fully part of our nature. And no longer do we have to educate ourselves and fight against our nature to be this way. This is a huge mission. It completely encompasses all of our existence as a nation, and it's going to go into the future. We are so unique in this, because it isn't just about one issue. It has permeated everything. It's as much found in religions as it is in the racial divides and political divides that are so common. And part of it has to do with something called the race structure of our country. I'll just touch on this. I know it's a little complicated when I talk about these things. That we have a nature right now, we call it our personal nature, which is relatively separative, very focused on one thing at a time. And that leads us towards a very faith-based understanding of our existence, which is not a bad thing, by the way. But it also makes us less inclusive and less understanding of our Creator when it's used the way we use it. That's called the six-way personality of a country. But we are moving towards having a thing called a second-race soul kind of consciousness in which we overcome our personal interests and instead try to seek out what it means in terms of being one with all and no longer being closed-minded, no longer believing that one religion is better than another, no longer believing, and I'm going into belief here now rather than just thought, that it is truly our destiny to be better than everybody else, or greater in some respect. This is where we are, at the present time, struggling. And this struggle will go on, like I said, for hundreds or more years. This is so fascinating. I hope you find this interesting, because I do find it interesting myself as I talk about it. Okay, so we have this amazing mission, which is permeating everything, going on behind the scenes, and it comes out all the time. I mean, it's like almost impossible not to turn on the news or read a magazine or whatever that you don't see it being represented in one way or another. And it's just remarkable, as I was, you know, the last 6 months with the, or 7 or 8 months with the election issues and the primaries, how these issues have come to the forefront, which is truly remarkable. And the question about prejudice of one sex against the other, I mean, that really was coming out in our election, if you think about it. Why is it that we are even separative men against women? It's truly remarkable. Think about this. Each of us are going to probably incarnate on an average about 3 times in one sex and then flip over to the other. And not only that, if we talk about races or religion, each of us is going to, if we are particularly heinous in our ways of dealing with other religions or other races, we're probably going to be incarnated and born into that particular race that we have been so nasty towards in a prior lifetime. This is what is so amazing about the process that we're in, because it's either be forced to change or to understand it and then recreate ourselves and actually have a faith in that. That's our nature. It's got to go beyond just education. It has to be part of us, a beingness, that we are truly these open-minded and truly loving people that openly and feel the love for everyone else that is part of who we are, and even those that live elsewhere in other parts of the world. Now, does that mean you have to love your enemies completely? Well, loving your enemies, in a sense, means sometimes preventing them from doing destructive things to themselves and to us and everybody else. So yes, if you believe it that way, that's fine. If you believe that it means that we give up our whole way of life and everything else because we're loving our enemies, no, I don't mean it that way. So here we are. Here we are learning that, I hope, that our missions have really come from a, we'll say, impetus of our souls to create a new direction for humanity. That really puts a tremendous responsibility on the people who live in the United States to get their act together. I have to tell you, the last, well, for sure the last 8 years, and before that for some time, there has been too slow of a growth in the changes necessary, in the missions that we still have to take and do. There has been a propensity to move towards greed and selfishness and not towards a more spiritually focused, we'll say, balance to the material side of life. And it's growing. It has been growing certainly since the spring of 2000, because this third ray business of change has caused it to become crystallized in us. It's causing us to want to hold on to the past. And we need to let go of that and move into what we might call the future. Yeah. But that future is not just some kind of random, like everybody's going to do their own thing, man, and whatever, you know. No, it really needs to be stated, I hope, as I'm trying to shape it a little bit in today's program, more about the inner changes of who we are. We have to start becoming what is known as more fourth-ray focused rather than third-ray focused, which is these ray changes that are taking place. And we have to become more inner reflective to achieve the missions that are coming up. Now, we know there are some crises. I'm going to mention them. I watched today an interesting program, What Happens Next Year When We're Out of Gas. It was on CNN, for those of you who might want a CNN investigation. They claim there's a good chance, not a certainty, but a good chance we'll be out of fuel by the end of next year, 2009. Okay, so what does that mean? How do we face these kinds of problems that are coming as forces? The first way is by using the two parts of the Creator's mind in our methods about what we're doing. We need to have freedom, and we need to have understanding about our own Creator and apply that in how we deal with ourselves and other people. If we do those things, then the creation of the material side will go much smoother. And yes, we will accomplish the changeover from a foreign oil fuel-based system, which is obviously screwing up the world and ourselves at the same time, to one in which there's a mixture of us using our own resources of fuel and energies that are easy to get to, or easier to get to, and then maybe some that are a little more complicated, but also mixing and growing that with alternative methods as we perfect them. And we will be able to do that better as our consciousness grows by us, instead of fighting among ourselves, starting to work together. Oh, so you see, there is an answer to our present problems, but we've got to see that the answer is more inwardly developed than just an external one of somebody inventing a blank blank, and they're going to stamp out a zillion blank blanks, and everybody's going to get one, and that's going to solve their problem. It's just not going to come that way. That we're well beyond that kind of solution. And besides which, the mission is intimately about who we are, not what we're going to have in terms of material issues. Well, I'm going to give ourselves a little time to break here. And when we come back, I will tell you more about our missions today. And it'll be very interesting, I hope, because hopefully more people will see a different side to how they can live their life. So we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes or so.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We are back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And again, we're dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and other sciences and physics and everything else, as usual. Today's show is the spiritual missions of the United States. It's certainly appropriate for the day it is. And let me go on and explain some more about where we are today. Why are there so many crises going on, particularly with the U.S.? Well, to begin with, one of the problems that we have had for a long time, I mean, really since the inception of the country, is that we do not exercise good judgment in the way that we select and the way that we empower people who work for us in our government. We have a republic, and that means that it's mostly democratic, but what we do is we select other people to work for us to run how our government is supposed to work. It's supposed to follow certain rules and et cetera. That's why we have a constitution and other laws that have been made over time. But one of the problems that we have confused ourselves with is to not pick the best candidates. Rather, we tend to pick people that are like us. But the problem is, one of our missions is to grow us, is to change us into something much better. So we should be looking for candidates who are more advanced in their spiritual development, better in their judgment, greater in their abilities to understand and love. And we tend to not do that. We tend to ignore those candidates or to not even to not support them in some way. And instead, we tend to be looking for, you know, someone who is closer to us in our understandings and who doesn't confuse us with any facts or anything like that, and instead is oftentimes seeking realities that we selfishly hold on to, like we want more money, we want to have more prestige, we want to make ourselves look and feel better. And so we pick someone who does that in their own life and is going to do that for us as in their position within our government. This is a huge mistake, but we've been making it for so long that I'm afraid that it's like the way we live rather than, you know, just some kind of simple mistake. And so we need to make some changes about that quickly, because through very wrong choices of a multitude of politicians over a vast number of years, we have retarded our government to the position of being not only not a leading government, but we have really fallen to a very relatively low level for a republic. We're nowhere near what a dictatorship would be or some other kind of, we'll say, dark, evil government. So I don't want you to think that I'm one of those people who says, oh, the government's evil. I don't really think so. I think that we as a people are not evil. So I don't, and for choosing people that are much like us, we're not choosing people who generally are evil. But we are certainly choosing people who are ignorant sometimes and who have lack of consciousness and understanding and who make huge mistakes and have great egotistical viewpoints on things and who make no corrections from where we're at. And so we keep going down the same road. So these are things to consider in our approach in terms of who we choose to elect. Now, I'm not talking about specifically anybody that is presently running for anything. That includes the presidential candidates or anything like that. I don't want you to think I am. I'm talking about a much bigger picture than that. I actually think that the two presidential candidates are much better than what we've been dealing with over the last couple decades. So I think we're doing a better job in some respects than some of the people that we've had, especially since the 90s, so to speak, were in play. But that doesn't mean that the people that were elected were the worst possible people. It just means they were too much like us. Now, it's hard for us to understand and to see, recognize people who are truly much more conscious. And oftentimes, those people don't even get into politics. So we almost have to, like in Plato's Republic, have to go out and look for them and maybe grab them and say, hey, wouldn't you like to be president? Yeah, I mean, because most people look at that whole process as being so corrupt and so terrible, and I mean, who would want to go through that? You have to ask yourself this. Who would ever want to go through everything you have to go through to be president or to be a senator or to be any of the things it takes to do? I mean, it's a horrible thing. Anybody who wants to do that must have some really serious ulterior motives that aren't all that great. In the most serious of situations, that's true. Now, there could be someone who is truly altruistic, truly a great leader, who that wouldn't be true of, but I haven't been finding them really getting into politics, or maybe they can't get into politics. All right, so we have a problem with our government. Our government is a serious issue. It's a serious negative in terms of the way we function. We need to change that almost immediately because we are in a situation now where if we continue to go down the road that we're going, we're going to lose the ability to lead anyone or anything, including the people in this very country, but also, unfortunately, people in the rest of the world. Remember, one of our first missions, which connects all of our missions together, is to be a leading country. How do you like that? Here I am talking about our government and everything else that may be failing, and our power went out here. I don't know exactly if there was any connection, and I don't want to believe that there was, but we did have a power outage. Now, I'm not at the radio station, which is in California. I'm calling in, so to speak, going through a lot of equipment here, and I depended upon that equipment. So we have to make it so this equipment won't go down next time. There is a way to do that, and we just haven't accomplished it yet. At any rate, sorry about that. We lost about a minute or so, but I'm back here. Here I am. And we could go off again. I don't know. So I'll just keep our fingers crossed. Okay. So we don't want to lose being a leading country, because once we have lost that, almost every mission we have and have had will be lost, including the ones we've already accomplished. But we could lose the benefits. All the great things that we did, from the greatness of helping to fight in certain terrible issues of war, to really changing the very nature of the world's political system. Even though our system isn't that great, we actually have made a great inroad in some circumstances to ending great darkness, or at least retarding it. Many people look at the Soviet Union and say, well, that was a pretty good thing. Although I'm afraid that Russia is trying to go back to that, partly because we are not leading. We're not. And we have to do that. Now, if we lose the leading position completely, this country will not survive much longer as a country. It'll fall apart. You might say, oh, that's not possible. No, I'm telling you that's my understanding of how it works. This is one of these things of use it or lose it kind of issues. And within a generation or two, there will not be the United States of America if we stop being the leading country. That's my opinion, for whatever it's worth. And I hope I'm wrong, by the way. I'm serious, because I wouldn't want to see us just disappear. But I'm afraid that, as I understand in a spiritual context and karmic issues and other things, if that's where we end up, then there won't be a United States of America. And some of you are probably applauding that don't live here and say, good, you guys have been turkeys for decades now, and we're through with you. Okay, well, and that's part of the issue. All right, how do we continue to lead better? Well, first of all, by changing our own government. And then the second thing is by changing ourselves in the next few years as quickly as possible and changing our responses to the crises at hand. What are some of those crises? Well, you've heard me talk about them. We have global warming. Some of you say, oh, it hasn't been proven. Well, I suggest you read about a page and a quarter, that isn't very much, in this month's issue, July, of Scientific American. Read that little article that deals with Antarctica and the Arctic, et cetera, melting at an incredible rate of speed and what's really going on. Read that, then look up the references in there to get a better, more thorough understanding. And if you still believe that we're not in global warming, give me a call. Let's talk about it. All right, so global warming is a very serious issue. Whether or not you believe it's being caused by human beings, it doesn't matter. Because if the end product is that a third of the life on the planet dies, or more, including us, we've got to do something about it. I mean, we have to do something to counter it, even if we're not the cause. Because I've heard some people argue, well, we're not the cause, but it's happening. Okay, fine, then. Let's do something to change it. Let's worry about who the cause is later. But for right now, let's do something to change it. Now, it does help to know that we are the cause because it'll be easier to change it if we do. But even if we don't agree on that, there are other things that can be done that could improve the situation. What else in terms of an immediate issue that we're dealing with? Well, we're in an energy crisis. Yes, we are. And it's all connected with global warming, but it's also connected to the economic survival of this country and the whole world, preventing us from going into a depression, a worldwide depression. It'll start off as a recession and move in that direction. How do we achieve that? Well, in order to achieve that result, we have to break the, we'll call it greed cycle of people who are involved with certain technologies, and especially what we call the oil economy. It doesn't mean we stop using oil. It means that we stop depending upon oil from sources of people who are greedy and selfish. We get oil and gas, a large part of it, from Canada. They're not particularly selfish and greedy, but they still sell to other countries. And as a matter of fact, they're getting ready to sell to China, which I think is a huge mistake on their part. It's going to come back to bite them. But I think it's important to realize that we can pick and choose how and what we use in terms of this energy source, oil, gas, and natural gas. And instead, move in a direction in which it's blended with conservation. Oh, that's a big word. In which we cut down our use tremendously. We use about 25% of all the energy in the world. If we were to cut it down by about half, which we can do, by the way, in the next few years, the results would be that for another 10 to 15 years, there would not be a oil crisis or oil, gas, natural gas crisis in terms of there not being enough supply, which is probably what is going to create the real economic disruption that we are headed for. So we can do that. And at the same time, the conservation saves us first, our own economic selves, and it allows us then to use the monies that we're saving to develop alternative resources of energy. Well, you see, that's why conservation has to come first, because if you do the other thing first, you don't have enough resources to get to where we want to go. We're going to go broke on trying to depend on oil and natural gas, especially from some of the people who don't like us too much, and we're not going to be able to get to finding the renewable situation. So conservation. Now, conservation is not well enough represented in the consciousness of our government. It's not supported by grants. It's not supported by almost anything right now. I mean, yes, if you want to do solar, that's fine. You can get grants for that in most states and throughout the country. There's various things. But solar isn't quite working. We're in that business, I know. The spiritual group I belong to, one of the businesses they have, is that. But it doesn't change anything because the technology is still a little, like maybe 5 years away or something. I don't know how far it's going to be. It could be next year. It could be whatever. We were hoping it this year, but then we heard a lot of things that weren't true, and it turned out they weren't where people thought they were. And unfortunately, our politicians bought into a lot of this stuff, too. It's all fantasies, smoke and mirrors. So we need the time. In order to buy the time, we need conservation. That's one of our missions. It's one of our missions. And again, if we don't lead in it, we'll lose that mission. And we could lose our country. And we could lose all the things, all the missions that we helped to develop could be weakened and some of them destroyed. This whole planet is like standing on our shoulders, and we need to do something about it. Now, some of you out there that are listening to me don't live in the United States, and you don't may not like the United States, because I know that's true. But you need to understand that if you really are objective, if it wasn't for the United States, there wouldn't be much of a world here right now. Some of the actions taken by the United States have been atrocious, but others have been world-saving. And without those world-saving actions, we'd be living in hell. Not to say it's great right now, but it would be a lot worse. So we have done some amazing things. We've also done some terrible things. All right. What else? What else can we do in terms of, and what are we facing in terms of, the missions that are coming up? Well, we are most likely facing, although the global warming is slowing it down, a potential pandemic of a flu, or some other diseases. What's happening right now, dengue fever is getting much worse because of the temperature rises, but flus are getting better because flus require colder weather, but dengue fever needs warmer weather. We need to be able to change an industry that is incredibly complicated and fed by huge amounts of money into an industry, I'm talking about the industry that involves pharmaceuticals, et cetera, into an industry that has purpose, where companies, instead of competing among themselves, share and work together. Now, I'm not talking about socialism now. I'm talking about where, for the first time, businesses start looking at themselves, instead of being separative, as being much more inclusive. Why can't 10 of the biggest pharmaceutical companies work on the same things, at least in different parts, and then share in the profits? Nothing in our government or our system says that can't happen. But do you see it happening? No. And that's what we're missing. You know, we have capitalism, but capitalism has many problems. And one of them is that it is separative. It doesn't have to be. It can be a way, in a way, very giving and very sharing. It does not need to be separative. It's just the way that we have chosen to have it created. So one of our missions is to change capitalism from capitalism to something other than capitalism, but not to socialism and not to communism, but rather to keep it at the present time as capitalism, because human beings are not advanced enough to live outside of there being something that they get for their efforts, you see. And it has to be in relationship. If it isn't in relationship, you end up with something like communism, where people get as they need, not as they work. Well, right now, if people get as they need, they say, well, I need a lot and I don't want to work very much. You see the problem. And that's what happened in countries that were using that system. They didn't work. Our system is a good system for who we are and what we are right now. I'm not saying 1,000 years from now we can't live in a totally different system. But right now, we need something that's close to what we've got, but not as separative, not as confrontive, as forcefully problematic. Another problem and mission area that we are involved in tremendously is the area of litigious, over litigious, way over litigious activity. We are the country of suing everything and everybody in every conceivable way you could imagine. What's wrong with that system? It's again based upon forces and contention, and it misuses the concept of law. Laws should be there to make life easier and simpler, not complicated and unbearable. Right now, our laws go in the wrong direction. How do we solve this problem? Well, it's one of our missions. One of our missions is to to prevent ourselves from acting out our differences through litigious methods. We have to change the process that we're in about that. That's going to take some doing, let me tell you. Again, it deals with government, and it requires a new kind of consciousness about how to resolve conflict and how to overcome conflict both in ourselves and between each other. If we don't do this within a few years, we're still going to have the same kind of disastrous outcome. We're going to litigicize ourselves, I don't know if that's a word, but it doesn't matter, into oblivion. Everybody will be suing somebody else and spending all their time, money, etc., doing it. And the interesting thing is everybody says, well, the lawyers will get rich. Interestingly, not necessarily so. Because if you destroy the economy that you're earning unusual amounts of money in, the money doesn't really help you anymore. Because eventually, nobody can pay you for whatever it is that you have become unusually rich in. And the monies that you had before will go, and then you won't be able to make any more. Now, the forceful way to solve all litigious issues is to reach a point where nobody can afford to sue anybody else. And we are moving in that direction. So just think about that in terms of our missions. What other missions do we have? And I'm running out of time. Oh, geez. We need to, and this is going to sound very like I'm egocentric or something, but we need to move away from eating animals. And that doesn't mean everybody has to become a vegetarian immediately. But it does mean that our way of seeing animals is wrong. And this is causing us to, unfortunately, not benefit from the animal kingdom like we have from plants and minerals. We're starting to. Some people are starting to see how beneficial animals can be to us in ways other than just eating them. But when we eat animals, we're also causing ourselves to have many problems, especially later in life. So as we're aging, we're able to stay alive longer, but we're not really very healthy. And a lot of this comes from consuming large amounts of animals. And so it's something to consider, and it's a mission I believe this country will eventually find through our healthcare system being unable to support so many older people who are so sick. I'm talking older, I'm talking about over eight, about 50 is where it starts to happen. And so if you want to stay healthier longer, you're going to need to change the diet of people. Does that mean you're eating no animals? Well, maybe not less animals. I don't know. But the point is that part of this is going to permeate into the healthcare system. And I don't care how much you get free healthcare. It isn't going to do you any good when they can't cure all the diseases that you got from consuming 50 zillion hamburgers and hot dogs and all the other things during your lifetime. That's the problem. And is it okay to have milk and eggs? Well, yeah, actually, milk, it comes from an animal, but it doesn't eat the animal. You don't eat the animal. And as far as eggs are concerned, they're not, if they haven't been fertilized, technically they're not an animal, technically. And that's, a lot of people feel differently about that. I'm just giving you my opinions here. But nonetheless, we need to make some changes in that because it is affecting our system of health. Anyway, I'm out of time. I can't believe it. I could keep talking about this for so much longer. I don't even have time to sum up anything. I need to quickly tell you that this Sunday I'm going to be talking about overcoming evil on 1170 AM. For those of you in the northeastern part of the U.S., you can just tune in. If you're not in that area, or if you would prefer, get on WDISAM.com and listen to me on the Internet from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Give it a shot. And I'd love to hear from you all, and please, if you have a chance, listen to that show. Also, Mimi from our spiritual group this Monday is going to be talking about Atlantis over at Glendale's Books and Music in Glendale, of course, Arizona, from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. That's July 7th. We are out of time for right now, so until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.